Hello, you're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show with me, Alison Spittle. This week's guests, I'll say the names, it's Matty Murphy and Michael O'Sullivan. Now, you probably haven't heard of these people, and that's perfectly fine. I'll give you a bit of background of why they're on the podcast. I went to the shops near my house, Fresh in Smithfield, and I was just intending to get some milk, and Michael came up to me and said, "Can I have a picture?" And I said, "Yeah, no problem." And he said, "Come down to my husband over here. He wants a picture with you as well." So I went down and I was getting a picture with Michael and Matty. And they started chatting and they said, "Oh, we've been on the television too." And I was like, "Oh, really? Yeah. What were you on?" And they said, "Oh, we were on the news." And I was like, "Oh, what? Wow. What happened?" And then what followed was the most amazing story I have ever heard of two people. I was supposed to go to the shop for about 5 minutes. I ended up staying for an hour. And I begged them for their phone number. And I said, "Please, can I get you on my podcast? I just have to get this recorded." And so here we are. And this is the last podcast I'll be recording from my house in Smithfield, because I'm moving. All I can see all around me is a load of boxes. So go listen to this podcast, and I'll start folding me clothes and chat to you in a few minutes. Murphy and Michael O'Sullivan, thank you so much for coming onto my podcast. You are two of the most interesting men I have ever met, and I had to get you on my podcast.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I can't wait to have a proper chat now. So, first off, we met, and I think it was yourself, Michael, that said, "We've been in a newspaper before."
What I said to you was, I said, "Alison, would you come over here and say hello to my husband?"
Yes! So tell me, you're married. Tell me about your story. You're married.
You go ahead.
Okay, I know Matty about 30 years. We worked together in Aircom. And over the years, he started coming out with me, because I know Matt didn't have too many friends in Dublin. He had some relations in the north of Ireland. And I'd bring him out to some sessions or parties that I was going to. And of course, everybody loved him, because he's a mm-hmm. he's a great, a wonderful character, and got on well with so many people. So I would bring him out and I'd stay over another time in his house. Last year, Matty started developing problems with his eyes, and it took about 8 weeks before he was diagnosed with giant cell arthritis. And he lost a good bit of his sight. His sight started to deteriorate, and slowly deteriorating over the period of about 8 weeks, until he got into the matter and they actually saved then the rest of his sight. So at that time, I'd lost my apartment. I was staying in a room in a house that I was renting, and the house was sold. So then we had to leave, and I couldn't get anywhere to stay. So I was staying in various different places in the north of Dublin, and a lot of time was in my car as well. And so Matt said to me one day, "Look, why don't you come over here and live over here? And if you look after me, then we're going to kill two birds with one stone. I'd be able to look after Matt in his deteriorating health, and I'd have somewhere to stay." So I said, "That sounds great, you know." So that's right. What we did.
And then my friend Mary, who advises me every night, she rings me, a very wise lady. And I remember she saying to me something about, "You know, when I die, that Michael would have my house." So she said, "Well, the only thing you could do then is get married." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And then after a few days, says, "My God, she has something." So I was walking through, Michael was standing in the middle of the room, and I just walked past, "Would you marry me?" He said, "Yeah."
Oh my gosh, that's how it happened. So,
well, the idea was that Matt couldn't pay me for looking after him. We were looking at getting him maybe he get a carer's allowance, but it's very, very little. And also Matt would have to be examined, his house would have to be examined, and unfortunately Matt's a hoarder, lots of things in his house. So more than likely they may not have actually given us a carer's allowance, but we decided it doesn't matter, we have a small pension each. And then Matt says, "Look, the only thing you can do is I'll leave you the house. It's only a small house in Stony Batter when I die, and that would be considered payment." And I said, "Okay, that'd be great, but you know I'd have to sell it immediately because the government would want a third of the value of the house in tax." So when Matt says that to Mary down the country, she said, "The only thing you can do is get married."
And that would solve all of that.
And that would solve the whole lot.
See, when I let it slip on Joe Duffy line, which I didn't plan to say at all, it was just ordinary to me. I mean, it didn't seem anything extraordinary. And then it hit the high places.
It hit the high places when you went on Joe Duffy?
Yeah. You had hundreds of calls. Joe rang on the Monday, said there were hundreds of calls afterwards. So whether people wanted to do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which could be dangerous if they didn't know their friends.
Yeah, so Joe Duffy, for people outside of Ireland, it's Ireland's biggest talk radio show. And
Liveline.
Yeah, Liveline. And often it's like the issues of the day is always brought up.
Yeah.
Now, how did you get to the point of Joe Duffy? From you agreeing to marry each other to Joe Duffy, how did the radio find out about you getting married?
What happened was Matt wanted to thank the Mater Hospital for what they'd done for him. 8 years ago he nearly died and they brought him back to life. Yeah. And this year or last year they saved half his sight. So a lot of what was happening on Joe Duffy at the time was negative, and Matt listens a lot to Joe Duffy. So he said, "I'm ringing up here to give us a good positive story." Yeah. So we rang up to give the good positive story, but you're put in a queue because it's a live show, you're put in a queue waiting. So for the crack, Matt says to the girl,
just
the researcher,
"Laugh.
Do you want to laugh?" And she says, "Yeah, go ahead." And he says, "I'm 83, I'm getting married next Friday." And she says, "Jeez, tell Joe.
And I said, No.
But of course, she would have been typing more than likely because she updates Joe on who the next person is. And suddenly Joe comes on and says to Matt, "Well, Matt, you're 83 and you're getting married."
And I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
That he heard what I said.
So that's what happened. And Matt says, "No, I want to talk about the Mater Hospital." So we spoke about the Mater Hospital. And then Joe came back and said, "Come on, you're 83, you're getting married. Who are you getting married to?" And he says, "I'm getting married to my best friend and carer, Michael O'Sullivan, to avoid inheritance tax."
Over the air.
Oh, my gosh.
So suddenly this, but we couldn't believe it. I suppose we're the first people to do it and announce that we're doing it for that reason.
Yeah.
Because lots of people more than likely do it in hidden. And we were keeping this hidden anyway. There was only a handful of people. My family knew and a couple of friends of Matt's knew. And we were going to do it silently down in Cashel. There was going to be five people there, me and
friend.
Matt.
With my friend Natasha, she was going to the wedding in her house.
Oh.
So there are two witnesses and, of course, the concelebrant.
And so you are, when gay marriage was being debated and when there was people against gay marriage, they said, "Oh, people will just get married to each other that are not in a relationship."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so you are the example of the bad thing happening. But it's actually not bad.
No, you know? I don't think it's bad.
No, I think it was the opposite too. But Michael's daughter was a bit annoyed because we were using what the gay people had fought for.
Yeah.
But I never thought of that. I just, in my head, it was legal for a man to marry a man or a woman to marry a woman. But people did that for land and in the royal family years ago to blend in, to mix in with. So I thought nothing of it.
Yeah.
And within the sentence notes, they checked, was it illegal? They sent us the message.
What happened was,
say, no.
The journalists, over that weekend, this was the weekend before Christmas, the journalists rang the guards first, and they asked the guards, would they be coming arresting Michael and Matt? And they said no.
Under what law?
Under that, it was something like, the fear was, this one my daughter had said as well, that like the green card in America, you can't just marry to get someone into the country.
Yeah.
So the fear was that if we were marrying for this reason and we're making it you know, the actual reason we're getting married was for to avoid the tax, that we could be arrested because that's not what marriage is supposed to be there for. But the guard said, no, we're not going to do anything. Then the journalist rang the revenue commissioners. Revenue commissioners said the same thing. No, we're not going to be looking after Michael. But the best one was the Irish Times rang Michael McDowell. Now, Michael McDowell is a former Minister of Justice, former Attorney General, and he gave a nice little contribution to the Irish Times saying that we were doing nothing illegal and what you can't do, what we're doing is perfectly right and legal.
So it was journalists kind of trying to make a bigger story out of it than what it was, would you say?
No, I think they were asking, I suppose they were just asking the questions that a lot of people would have been asking in their own head, because, you know, supposedly marriage is a binding for love and for taking care of each other. But originally marriage wasn't it. Marriage was a business contract.
Right.
You know, you think, as Matt said, the kings and the queens of England, they were married.
Landowners in Ireland, landowners. Well, of course, we married the daughter to the man because she had land or he had land. But that would be, they wouldn't be same-sex marriages. But this was arranged for them.
But
no.
It's same. I know it's a different sex marriage, and yours is a same sex marriage.
Mm.
But it's probably like the same amount of mutual respect between each other, or whatever.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be sexual, really.
No.
I think basically people are kind of people. If you put down the base questions, they're basically going, "Are you writing?" That's what they're.
Well, that was funny.
Did
thing
you
to come
actually
up.
Get asked?
We got.
That?
We didn't get asked about it. But one of the ones on one of the Twitter feeds that was going on, one said to each other, "Well, they better ride each other just to be sure, you know."
I didn't know there was
was
it on what's the television program that I said? Well, I didn't have a young brother or sister. And I always thought of Michael all over the years as my young brother, and I'll give him a lash of the tongue.
Yeah.
I won't let anybody else give a lash of the tongue to him.
Because you've been friends for 30 years.
Well, I mean, it is my young brother. I didn't have a brother. I'd love to have had a young brother or sister.
Yeah.
And I didn't. And I sort of adopted him, I think, then as that. And now more than ever.
Yeah.
You know, it is. It's just there is that bond. Michael says he feels the same.
Oh, no, it is the same. You know,
and I worry
about love is not just sexual love. Love,
no.
You know, it's like loving children. You live your children.
Yeah.
And you have that bond with them. You know, and it's the same thing. And they did, I said it on Claire Byrne, you know, is there love? Of course there is. I love Matt. I think he's great. And he loves me. And But it's not the same love as sexual love. But what's the difference? What is love?
Well, so long as the love is there. As Mrs. Brown said on her show one night, I love Mrs. Brown.
Oh.
And she said when her gay son wouldn't be married in the church, the priest wouldn't marry him. And I always remember, what does it matter anyway? Jesus told us to love one another.
That's the truth.
That was the main. And most
just
religions, that's
another.
What it is, love one another.
Yeah.
And so when the this was the week before Christmas, what was that week like for you after the Joe Duffy show had come out? Like, who had got in contact with you? What had happened?
It was like a dream. It all happened so quickly.
Yeah.
I like clothes. I don't even know what I was wearing going down to sign on, because we were to go down the country. Then there happened to be a cancellation under registrar, accidentally, which never happens. So the next day we were in to sign them.
Tell me about your wedding day then.
Yeah, well, what happened was, unfortunately, the man who was going to marry us was a humanist reverend.
Mm.
But when all the furore broke out, he was contacted by the humanists and said, look, you better leave this, because if it was illegal, which was the fear at the time, they could be sued and they wouldn't have the money to cover it.
Right.
So he rang me back and said, look, he says, just ring the registry office. They can't refuse you because they've given you a license to marry. They can't refuse you. So I said, okay. And I rang on a Monday morning. I said, rang the registry office. I said, any chance of getting married? And they said, yeah, great stuff. When do you want to get married? And I said, Friday. And he laughed. And he says, no, normally, he says, you have to give months notice, you know, 6 months notice, you know, before you can get married. And I said, well, look, I said, do you have any cancellations? And he laughed again. He says, this is not like going to the theatre. You know, people usually don't cancel their weddings. And I said, look, I said, just please, just take my number. If anything happens for Friday, let me know. So what happened then was he, the following morning, I get a phone call, this guy laughing. He says, you won't believe, he says, there's a cancellation. So the cancellation, when we did meet the registrar, what she told us was the couple who were to be married at 1 o'clock on Friday hadn't filled their forms in correctly.
Oh.
So the registry officer had cancelled them to leave. So the serendipity of it, you know, that we, so they offered it to us and we said yes, and it was just great. It was just great. We went down, my friend Frank Woods was my best man.
Yeah.
Friend of Matt's, Deirdre O'Mara, was the bridesmaid, for want of a better word. Yeah. And we just said we'd go down and we met near the registry office. There's a nice coffee shop down near the registry office on the lower Grand Canal Street.
You don't remember any of it?
We all had coffee all there, and of course the journalists were around and the cameras and everything. And we walked up to the registry office. If you get a chance, look up Michael O'Sullivan, or sorry, maybe this way, Matt Murphy and Michael O'Sullivan on Google, and just search for it. And you'll pick up lots and lots of different clips. Particularly have a look at the Claire Bourne live show from Monday the 18th, which is a very, very nice show.
Good.
With us on it, you know. So.
Did you ever feel, I want to ask you as well, what did you wear on your wedding? What did you have for dinner? Tell me all about this stuff.
Oh, Michael had a lovely jacket that he bought in advertising.
Bojangles. I'm going to advertise. Bojangles is just on Smithfield in Dublin 7, near the Lewis Lines.
Oh, yeah.
And we go in there a lot because he has just fantastic gear. So I had a jacket that I'd got there for my daughter's wedding in 2016. And then I had a nice waistcoat from there. And I didn't. I got a special jacket from Bojangles.
With the big eagle or something on
the
back.
It's got a cobra in gold embroidered on the back.
Oh,
and two sunshines embroidered on the front. I mean, it was just a fantastic jacket. I had a hat then that we got in Zara or someplace like that.
Was it?
And Matt had a gorgeous Zara coat that he wore. It's a double-breasted black coat.
It's not a suit now, just a full-length.
Full-length. He did wear a jacket underneath. We both had dicky bows on, and we both wore hats. At the ceremony, we didn't take off our hats.
Don't remember going down or what I wore.
Yeah.
And we were sitting. I was actually signing the thing before it sort of registered in my head. And then we went for the meal after, which was lovely. Then I began to come back to the reality. Because to me, at the back of my head, I'm dreaming. I'm going to wake up. I'm dreaming. I'm going to wake up.
Yeah.
We went up to the gasworks, which is just up from... the canal on Upper Grand Canal Street, and Frank Woods, who was my best man, he brought us their dinners, and it was just
lovely,
a lovely time.
Lovely meal.
Didn't let us put his hands in our pockets. He's a great man.
Don't worry.
It was a happy day.
Oh, it was, yes. And I had to speak to some American paper, was it?
That was later.
And then the photographer came along, and he happened to be, found the photographer, that had photographed exhibition on some years ago.
5 years previously.
And had asked for me, from the agents, would I model for nothing? And he'd give me a picture of myself afterwards, which I did. And the picture is only huge.
Oh, wow.
Black and white, a mad doctor in a white coat and stethoscope on me.
But that was serendipity
again. And he'd forgotten
again.
All about it. He'd forgotten about me when then we saw it again then.
Oh, we did have a film. Someone recommended we document it, and if we do, we should actually film it.
Yeah.
So a girl called Anne Sheridan from the Irish Mail on Sunday recommended this guy, and when we found out who he was the same guy who photographed Matt 5 years ago.
Oh, wow. And how was your relationship with the press that day? Did they allow you to have privacy? Was it like, it must have been strange to kind of, to give yourself some privacy, because like, with the press, you know, like it.
Well, they gathered all around us at the coffee shop, and then they followed us taking photographs from, we walked over, because the guy wanted to film us, Donald Maloney is his name, photographer and filmmaker, and he wanted to actually, you know, film us walking along the street and all that. So they did that, but there was all cameras all around us.
Yeah.
So that was it. And then they all decided to go into the church, and so we got most of them out of the church, the registry office.
Mm.
And then they were waiting for us outside. And I mean, it was like a celebrity scrum.
It was actually, look back on it. I was half there, half not there. Yeah, I mean, I had the wildest dreams, sometimes really fantastic. I say, no, you're dreaming now, come on, get a grip. I said, no, this is reality. Now, come on, get on with it. Every now and then I came back, no, this is one of your mad dreams. Then get on with it. But as the day went on then, and we had the meal, I began to come back to reality. It seemed a bit strange, but it happened so quickly. You see, it wasn't planned over a week. Just suddenly there was the vacancy. You get in and sign the form.
Yeah.
You know.
And did you get any reaction from people? Because I'm sure you watched the debates. Maybe was it maybe 2 years previous to you getting married, with the same-sex debates, same-sex marriage debate. Did you get any reaction from the people that were warning Ireland against this situation happening?
We had one negative, but I would have expected it from him.
Right.
But
okay.
What he had said in his writing was that he, can we say his name?
Yeah, go
David,
for it.
David Quinn.
Oh, what, you know, an absolute wally.
Oh,
I'll say that now. That's Don't bad. Worry, there's no BAI. You're fine.
Anyway, so he came along and says, yes, that when the same-sex marriage was happening, he was telling that this was going to happen. But I don't think he did. That was the only negative. I can't think of anyone else. All the journalists was positive, and anyone we meet, we've met people walking along the street.
They've been so nice.
They've been just so nice.
They have, everybody, yeah. And they even recognise us now and then out of the blue. Ah, you know.
Yeah, because you are like a couple. Like, it sounds odd to say this, but like there's a genuine affection more between you than a lot of married couples I see. Do you know, you seem to enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, no, but I over the years, I've always enjoyed Matt's company.
Yeah, How could you not?
Yeah. You can see that.
Oh, come on now, my head is swelling. I'm a contrary old devil, you don't know me. Sorry.
Oh, you're grand, don't worry, you dog.
No, it is, because there's always a conversation goes on, there's something happening, you know. There's never ever really kind of silence between us,
no.
You know. There's always some sort of conversation. There's always a bit of crack. But he just needs. He had 7 falls, believe it or not, before we got married. Before the actual, this was before his eyesight went. He had 7 falls, and now
just trip and fell.
Yeah, he hasn't fallen since. I do keep an eye on him walking along, because I wouldn't like anything to happen to him. Like, if he fell and broke a bone or something like that, it would be terrible for him, you know.
Yeah. Like, extraordinary. I didn't, as he said, Jesus fell twice. I had to fall 7 times.
Oh, well, God, Jesus had a lot to eat across the bears.
He did, yeah.
I had to do one better. And I said today to him, his ad on the television was for the air phone, and the song was, anything you can do, I can do better. Now it should be our signature tune.
I suppose I should ask you as well, have you been married before? And how was this a different day to being married before? Or?
Oh, no, I wasn't. No.
Right.
I was very much the old bachelor.
The old bachelor?
Yeah.
And you're from the countryside?
Yeah.
And you were living in Dublin?
Well, I grew up with the gentry. Very ladylike. And, of course, this is still in me, and people think I'm a bit snobbish.
It's not.
It's just that everything was gentle. You never made noise. You didn't bang. Nobody shouted. Never heard a swear word.
Yeah.
Everything was gentle. We're still talking about that. And everything was awfully nice, you know. And I grew up with this. And then people started talking about me, and they thought that I was one of the gentry.
Yeah.
I don't know who my dad was. I was told by my grandmother when I was 20, but other than that, I don't know. So I caused a scandal in a Church of Ireland family when I arrived, and now I'm going out with a bang.
You are. You're always creating the scandal. I love it. When you say you grew up with the gentry, so were you part of the gentry yourself? You grew up in a house?
Or? Oh, no. I worked for them, but they were very nice.
Yeah.
And for the gentleman of the house, you tipped your cap each morning if you met him, sort of thing. And then he was very, very gentry person. And he said, you don't have to touch your cap each time you meet me, you know.
Oh, he said
and,
that.
But the others were lovely. They were real gentry. They'd been presented at court to the Queen and all years ago. Their two brothers had been killed and tortured in the war. And she, as the older lady, took on that huge farm.
Yeah.
And ran it with the help of a steward. And that took some doing. And they had ladylike life. And I admired her for that.
Wow.
I really did.
Matt was born in 1935, and he knows, and he doesn't, he was illegitimate.
Yeah.
And he lived in a small lodge, the lodge of the big house. This big house was in Tipperary, and there was 2 lodges. And Matt started off life in one of the lodges, the main lodge. And he was growing up always thinking that his mother and uncles were his brothers and sisters.
Right.
Yeah. And then eventually his mother did get married and moved to the other lodge at the other gate. But Matt stayed with his grandparents, and then he looked after his grandparents all their life.
Wow.
But when he was 13,
they were my parents, you know, too. They weren't mum and dad to me.
Yeah.
They always, and they still are in my head.
As your parents.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you were essentially born, servitude's the wrong word.
Yeah.
No, that's the right word.
Would you say you were born into servitude then, and you kind of had a role?
I suppose it would be. Well, the thing is, I was sent to school. Well, cousins up north who said they could afford to give me schooling took me up when I was about 12 or so. Yeah. I didn't like the north and I wanted to come home. And I even wrote a letter down and said, if you don't bring me home, I'm going to jump under the train. I had them up the walls.
There was no phones
then days, you see. You got the letter. And I didn't know. So I came back and they were going back to school. Our relatives went down there to Wexford. They were coming back to collect me to go back to school, but I wasn't going. So I went up there that morning. I saw the car arrive and I went away up the woods. I was born in the middle of a big wood, trees everywhere and birds and squirrels and everything. That was my life. And they were calling me and calling. I said, I'm not going back. And I didn't. So they had to go without me. And the old lady, they now say I resemble in that. The big house came along. I can still see her. And she said, oh, what's he doing here? And has he not gone back to school? My granny said, no, he wouldn't go. What do you mean he wouldn't go? He should be made go. Well, I hated her from then on. How dare she talk to me? And I didn't.
Really?
So then the lovely lady, the Petronella and I, she was an angel. She was like a mother to me. She, God rest her, she was a lovely, lovely person.
Miss Gray.
She was the vicar's daughter.
Yeah.
Part of the gentry, but as plain as they come, she gave me a lot of great advice over the years, she did, you know, in her own way. So
at 13 and a half, Matt went to work in the big house as a
trainee
butler.
She said, come in and do some work.
A trainee butler.
Yeah. So at 13 and a half, I was scrubbing floors and polishing silver and opening the door to the people and such and serving meals at mealtime, the dishes round the table. Hooked me way up. But I mean, there was no such thing as butlers then.
No.
But them days were gone. Kitchen maid, housemaid, second housemaid. They'd had them years, but they were gone then. I did everything.
So this would be in the 40s then that you it became a butler?
So Matt was born 35, he would have started working about 1948 and then going into nearly 1970 when he was nearly 20 years.
So you were 17 years with that family.
Yeah.
And what was it like in a big house of that time from the 50s until 1970? Because I feel like... You know, so there's an old house in Mullingar called Belvedere House.
Oh, Belvedere,
and you go through the history of the house and, you know, you have the different people. And I always find it very interesting, the 20th century of these big houses. Because back in the day, there was a system, you know, there was the Queen, you know, you had your guests, you had your hunting lodge. But then in the 20th century, you know, World War II had happened and the system had come to a halt because, you know, we're part of a republic now.
Right.
So what was their role like in the Republic of Ireland? They kept their house and everything, but...
Well, they owned a big house in London, wasn't it? Well, the Rhodes Amateurs.
The Rhodes Amateurs were a famous family because I looked up their history.
Yeah.
And they have a big place up in, I think it's up in Yorkshire or Lancashire as well, the Farnley House or something like that is called, Farnley.
Right.
And so they were quite well known. So the Rhodes Amateurs were still, even in those days, were still considered to be gentry, very much so. Even after World War II, you know, they were still considered gentry.
Mm. Right. Okay. And where are they now? Where is that family now?
They're all gone now. They're both ladies that I worked with. One was real horsey and couldn't give a damn, but patches on her trousers, she didn't give a damn. But the other was very, very ladylike, but the two brothers were killed in the war. And then their niece, who would have inherited the place, she married a man much older than she was. They went to England, they had two children. She died, Petronella. I couldn't believe. Now her husband, I think, but that would be my contact with her.
Yeah.
But she's gone. So the whole family are gone, except her sons, I don't know.
I suppose the Irish connection of the Armitages are now gone because Doris and Eleanor, who were the last two ladies, when they died, that was the end of it.
And there's a cousin of theirs used to come from England, and she owned Dinish Island.
Right.
And then sold it. She was a lovely little person, not snobbish in any way, very nice little person. They were all lovely people that came there. There was only one or two people a bit snobbish. There was a colonel, which I didn't like.
Yeah.
He'd only grunt at you. And anyway, there was a party on his daughter's 21st birthday, I must tell you. And the lady of the house, now met, we'll want you to go over and help with the party and the thing. I said, no. And she looked at me, startled me. Oh, I said, no. I have no intentions of helping her. I say good morning to him going into church, and he only grunts at me. I said, I will not. And she said, we'll have. I said, no. And if you want to sack me, go right ahead. The first time I ever stood up, the devil got up in me.
Yeah, yeah. So you were treated well then?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Matt would have lived in the lodge. When Matt looked after his grandparents, I'd say his mother moved down to the other lodge, and Matt lived with the grandparents and looked after them until they died. And yeah. Then Matt was in the house on his own for a period of time until he left for Dublin. You know, so, yeah. But I suppose he had some place to live. He didn't have to pay for that. But he wasn't necessarily paid very well.
You got
fed, I suppose. You got fed in the house
food
as well.
And everything,
you
know. And free keep and everything else. But
did you have a bit of savings to go up to Dublin?
Well, I don't know why I started out on that. Then suddenly I was gone. And it was a dental surgeon. This was my good friend, James O'Gorman. He too was a butler, but fully trained to be a butler. And still is my best friend. He said, this man was applying. So I came up to Dublin, met this man out in Dunleary. I need somebody instantly, immediately. How much are they paying you? Oh, that's ridiculous. Tell them you're leaving and come on up. His wife has gone to Australia to the daughter who is expecting a baby. So I came up, gave them short notice, I think about a week, and I came up then. So I took over running his house for him. And he went up to his dental surgery every morning. Then he called me his Jeeves. Oh, I couldn't exist without Matt. Matt's my Jeeves. And I became part of the family. So I did 2 years with him. And then, that's when a trip to Australia came up. A cruise to Australia. 6 weeks going, 4 or 5 weeks in Sydney for Christmas, New Year, and 6 weeks coming back on the ship, all for free, to keep an elderly man company who wasn't feeling very well.
Wow.
And then the next job I had to look for when I came back, and she was a Jewish jeweller lady who had owned two jeweller shops in Dublin. Her house was only too perfect for words, white carpet everywhere, and very modern and all the rest. Anyway, I stayed on with her for 2 years, and then she got me my own car, everything for me, raised my wages, and I really couldn't. I was stuck in the house all day. So I had to leave a note and say, I'm sorry, I'm going. But it's the compliment. She actually wrote to me and said that if you haven't got a job, would you like to come and help me to the south of France and help me with the grandchildren? Wasn't that kind?
That was very
after
kind.
Leaving. Wasn't it a kind thing to do?
Yeah, very much so. And was that the end of your career as a butler then?
Yeah. And then I worked with ordinary people, which I always wanted to do, work with ordinary people and just garage equipment. And there were lovely men. One man was more feel like I am, and the other, and the young men were, and I'd parcel everything up to off to garages and such. So then it came for me time to leave there and go into Aircom. And they gave a little teapad to the two girls in the office, and they sat at the desk outside. And didn't Jim, the man, actually cry? And I couldn't believe it. I'd only been there in 2 years. And the manager said, any time you have spare time, come back and help us with stock taking. So I never went back. That was a lovely compliment to me.
Very
lovely.
You know, lovely. Yeah.
It really was.
I mean,
I was just an ordinary person. Why? So I don't know.
Just there's the proof of how Matt affects other people.
Yeah,
well, but
he doesn't see it, but I see it, you know. And that's when at the wedding, one of the things that I did say was my little talk of the wedding was when I rekindled my relationship with Matt, or friendship with Matt. We used to go into Boyer's shop up to the restaurant.
Oh yeah,
everyone used to go to the restaurant. So I was walking up the stairs with Matt, and there was a girl polishing and cleaning the banisters. So as I was going up, Matt goes over and says, "Hello, how are you? You're doing a great job there." And the woman's, "Oh, hello," and big smile on her face. And as I walked into the restaurant, I said to Matt, you know, I said, you're after making that girl's day. And he says, no, you did, I said.
Yeah.
Nobody
my
talks.
Instinct said she was there as part of the furniture and she cleaning away and nobody, just, you know, she was slightly foreign. And I thought, oh dear God, this is unfair. So I just, to cheer her up, said, that's great work you're doing. And then I went out and got a little bar of chocolate for her and brought it in. And Michael, that gave me great pleasure. Me. And I thought, if it made her smile, wasn't it lovely? I love people. And as I get older, I'm more obsessed with other human beings and their feelings. And I want to be...
Yeah.
I always
he's very
was,
empathetic. You know that word where they, a lot of people have lost that. They've lost compassion and empathy for other people. And Matt has that in spades. You know, he is very empathetic towards people. He can feel what they're feeling. Which we don't anymore. We just see people struggle.
I know any of us in such a hurry nowadays. There, everyone's rushing.
Yeah.
But I can't help it. This is something inside my head that makes me feel like that. You know, to make somebody smile us, or somebody look down and out on the street. I made a friend with the homeless, Thomas. He was writing poetry on the street, and he was on drugs. This is my first time on camera with RTE, and. Then one day, I was like to come and have a cup of coffee. I loved to Matt. But they wouldn't let us in because he was on drugs to the restaurant. So we started in the GPO arcade. So we met there for our coffee and our chat and all the rest. And then it transpired that RTE came out. They sent the camera out. The girl was singing operatic songs. And Tom had asked her to sing this song. And they took... So they got him in. Then I had to come in and speak to RTE and tell them how we met. Then they filmed me talking to him and sitting having coffee with him down at the fruit market. And then we went up to Christchurch Cathedral for the choir. And
it was the High Hopes Choir that was arranged by David Brophy from RTE.
Yeah.
It was a three-hour-long documentary piece. It was a fantastic piece of work.
So Matt was a lovely partner. Work into that.
David Brophy.
He really was there on his knees begging Thomas to go down for rehearsals. And I used to go, yes, selfish devil, you're getting the opportunity of a lifetime. You can't sing. Now get up and go on down and do your... I used to fight with him.
Yeah.
And I'd lost touch with him because I don't go into town every day. But somebody said the other day, Spix man, he might be back on drugs again. And they got him a lovely apartment, a lovely modern apartment, Focus Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, which would be sad if he had gone back on that again.
Well, I just by chatting to you and by listening to your story and the way that you said you always wanted a brother and sister, I feel that you make your own family each time. Do you know, that's why you're so empathetic, because you're so open to having people in your life.
I suppose it is, yeah. Well, my granny's words, when I quoted this to so many times, and the finger pointed in your face, do to others as you would wish them do to you. I got that drilled into me. You know, she was always a wise saying. So I tell you a vulgar one, listen. You can cut it out. One day, little woman to Christine down the way, and our little dog had died. And I thought, oh dear God. And she was old at that time. We were walking past the door. She seemed a bit sad in herself. And she said she'd been in the matter for a while as well. And the poor little dog was lying there. I said, oh dear God, when that dog dies, she'll lose her reason. I couldn't get it out of my head, but she didn't, thank God. When she was free, she went off for a holiday. But she was there, and I said, here, I'll tell you a dirty joke. My granny, I said to her one day, I don't know what to do. I'm fed up, I don't know what to do. You don't know what to do, well, I'll tell you. Blacken your arse and go mad. Well, she went up the street laughing.
Oh, good. I would ask you one more question about being a butler before... before I move on from that, what do you think makes a good butler? Like, what good tip? Or what made you different? I suppose people really appreciated you, it sounds like, from the past.
Well, I suppose you'd have to have good manners. And I never had to bow to people when they come, you know, just, you know, they just open the door and welcome them in. And then you serve a table, you hand the dish around, put the plate down, serve the vegetables round, and clear away after that and reset the table. And afternoon tea was a very special occasion. Big silver tray, silver kettle, tea pot, and the table was all set out, the big dining room table, silk, china cups and saucers. Afternoon tea was a meal when you were invited. dinner and lunch was, but afternoon tea was a special as right. well, you know, and then let all the ending of the table set for dinner. Mm. You know, a dinner could go on late at night, you know, chatting and talking. They put the knife and fork down, they talk away, and I said, their food is going cold, why don't they eat it?
There was one woman we met down in Cashel, her name is Petronelle Clifton Brown is her name, but she was a person who used to come regularly to where Matt lived. She was
she
another member of the gentry from another family called the Grubbs, but she remembers Matt. Now, she would have been about 8 years, maybe 7, 8 years younger than Matt.
Oh, yes.
But she always remembered Matt being immaculate, being ever-present.
In a white coat.
always doing his job very, very... But she remembered Matt.
Wow.
You know, as being this almost perfect gentleman butler. She's
always admiring my silver in the pantry. She see all the silver shining in the pantry, all the big dishes and trays and everything. She remember her saying that too.
But in the end, Matt and this woman called Miss Gray, who Matt talks about as a second mother, that they were the only two left in the house as the servants.
Yeah.
If you want to call
to run the whole house, yeah.
And you were running the whole house, you knew no one was coming back, or at what point did they call it a day on the big house?
Well, I think that the two elderly sisters were still living there, and she was still running when I left.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, she was always advising me, you know, to,
Miss
you know,
Gray.
Always gave me wise advice in every sense. And if I had any problem, I discussed it with her. She was like a mother. Now, Petronelle said, she said first to me, she said, and she was my godmother, wasn't I lucky? I said, you are very, very lucky. And she knew she was. We were talking about her the last time we were down. We're talking about Miss Gray, the wise things. No nonsense about her. Just sit there and chat away. And yet she was the rector's daughter. She could have been snobbish. She wasn't a bit, no. Neither were they. They were lovely people too.
And I want to ask as well, because Ireland has a strange relationship of legitimacy with children, especially in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. What was it like being an illegitimate child? Were you treated any differently? Or
I wasn't actually. Mm. Not by the public, only sometimes be at work and remember and whoever the person would be. And who was this little lad? And mother would mutter something. Well, it didn't worry me because she was my sister.
Yeah, yeah.
And my big brother, that's when I had a brother. And I used to fight with him. But and he put a tie on. I had to go up the stairs and fix his tie for him. He couldn't put his own tie on. Now, you can go out and listen to the radio. Why can't I go? You have to go to school in the morning. That's not fair. You know, the things, that, he was like a bigger brother to me. So it was. Well, then he was gone. He died quite young.
Right.
I think that just...
But I'm just going to cut across because Matt had two other uncles. He had three uncles and his mother.
Scandal?
Yeah.
Tell me
they
more.
They had to leave.
Two uncles left. One went to Canada and one went to England because they were horrified at that sister had got pregnant.
No.
Now, the other was Harold was your brother, was it? No. What was your other uncle's name that stayed?
Oh, Bill.
Bill.
Bill. He was the big brother that fixed his tie.
Yeah, he stayed, but the other two went because of the scandal. They left the country because of the scandal.
I wouldn't speak. Dorothy, the wife, told me that when she was, Frank's wife, when she was coming over on holiday to Ireland, she said, well, if you don't speak to your sister, I will not travel with you.
Brilliant.
So she told me she made him speak.
Good.
To his sister. Mm. So, but I suppose it was an awful... It was an awful scandal in them days. It was, really.
It must be mad to be a scandal for existing, though. Like, it's not...
No, for doing something that is natural.
Oh, of course.
It's such, doing something that's not, you know, it's crazy. Yeah, well, of course it was. But you can't say in this case it was the Catholic Church because it was the Protestant Church.
Yeah.
Because these were all Protestant people. But they still had the same ethic, I suppose, that, you know, no sex outside of marriage. But, you know, again, the woman gets the blame.
Yeah.
But a man was involved. It's like all these Magdalene Laundry things. All they talk about is the women and how shameful. They don't talk. Without a man, these women didn't have children. And yet the men are just brought out as if, oh, they have nothing to do with it. They were, I suppose, they were lured by these lurid women, you know, which was just terrible, you know. So,
but I remember coming home very tired from work one night. My granny had gone to bed. And I would hang my coat. I said, oh, I'm tired. And I said, now, are you sorry you didn't keep going to school up north and make something of yourself? I said, I lost my coat. I said, no, I'm not. What does it matter anyway? Who am I? And she said, what do you mean? Who am I? Who is my father? And she said, how do I know who my father is? So then she mentioned a man's name. Yeah. And he came on the bicycle when I was expected and said, offered to marry my mother. And her brother said if he came again, they'd shoot him because he was Catholic.
No.
Now, I don't know. But then the rumour now has it that it wasn't. It was some of the gentry was my dad.
Right.
One of the two boys that were killed in the war. They're saying one of them was his father.
Wow. Is that why, like, your mother moved to the other house? It seems like...
No,
she got married to my stepfather.
Right.
Got married to my stepfather. And they had a little baby, and I remember that. When can he play? And I said, didn't know. I heard the baby crying, and I said, how did you know? Oh, we found it under a bush. Well, I went out through the woods the next looking, listening, could I hear another baby? If you told that to youngsters today, they'd say he needs his say. He said, I wonder if he was
six or seven.
And then the little baby died. Oh. And I can still see the little white coffin going out. And you say, when'll he be big enough to play? When'll he be big enough to play?
Yeah.
John Joseph, they named him John Joseph. I often think of that too.
Yeah. You know,
going back over all them hundreds of years ago. Isn't it funny the way the memory and other things I completely forget that other things that happen? But that was a little dramatic time in my life too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just...
You've had such a interesting, varied life.
Well, it really have, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose I was lucky with my little education. I've said this a lot lately.
Yeah.
That I was lucky, thank God, that I worked with, got involved with the most interesting people. The gentry, the dental surgeon, the jeweller, the Jewish jeweller, and then ordinary people. I got my time working with them, and then I went into Aircom. And then this thing came into my life.
And this is how you met. You met at Aircom.
Yeah, yeah.
I should ask you, Michael, about your life before Aircom. Yeah, no, you would take over.
There's nothing compared to that.
I kept asking. No. It's so interesting.
Well, you have your own story.
Well, I'm married about 25, and we separated around 30. We had one child, and then I met somebody else. I had two more children with that girl, and mm-hmm. then she left. what are you laughing at? So I was on my own then at that time, when I kind of just, I suppose, met again up with Matt, because I met Matt during the first separation afterwards. I met Matt in work because we were both from the same area. And but then I had the second relationship for 7 years, and then when she left, I thought we just kind of rekindled, and Matt started coming out with me we were in touch because we'd see each other in work. But going out to sessions, I like going out to the singing sessions, and I used to go to parties in people's houses where there was a lot of singing taking place and music and that. So Matt started coming along to that with me.
Yeah.
And I suppose I fell in love once more, but unfortunately the girl didn't reciprocate, even though we hung out with each other a while. I really enjoyed her company, and she enjoyed my company, but it wasn't any...
Sorry, can I interrupt there?
Yeah.
He even tell you how much he asked me to meet her and see what I thought of her.
Wow.
For a cup of tea in Abbey Street, and I remember it so well, and she was lovely. I liked her. Sorry.
I'm happy you did.
She was a lovely girl, but unfortunately nothing happened with that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So then I didn't meet anyone else. I was to hang out with Matt and go do my drama and go to the singing sessions, and that was it, really. I know it's a shorter version of Matt. But Matt is much more interesting because of all the things he had gone through his life, all the different things, you know. So, but
you have an interesting life too.
I do have three wonderful children.
Things,
you know, three
they are.
Wonderful
yeah.
children.
I must tell this little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know them
You're
so well.
You're very like a married couple.
We are.
Of course, I know.
We are married.
I know.
Christmas before last, we went out. They all met Rachel and her girlfriend, and Nathan and his girlfriend, and Shelley and stuff, all round the table for a cup of coffee. And I, for some reason, I said to Michael, now, you leave me for 5 or 10 minutes with them. Make an exit to the loo. So I got the opportunity. I said, now, I want you all to listen to me very carefully. Your dad's been my best friend for 30 years or more. And I said, I've always admired him because he's been there for any problem any of you ever. Rang Dad, he'll fix it. Ring Dad and he'll fix it. And I admired him because he was always there. I didn't have that now. I said, never, ever forget that. And then I thought, oh, if you, Jesus, now I'm their stepfather.
Hello again, this is Alison. I'm doing an advertisement now for Copperberg. Copperberg have very kindly sponsored the show and did it a great event with me, James Kavanagh and Maureen O'Connell. And you should listen to that, those episodes, they're great fun. And at the Camden Backyard, and they've been a great sponsor. So thank you very much to Copperberg. I still have one bottle of their lime and elder flower left. And I'll probably have that as a treat now after I've finished folding all my clothes. Oh, Janie Mac, will this ever end? I have so much stuff I need to send to the charity shops. Like, ugh. I have a t-shirt for a fictional hen night. A fictional hen night. I have loads and loads of stuff now that I need to throw out. But, yeah, so, oh, sorry, shouldn't be talking about the moving. Back to Copperberg. yeah, so thanks very much to Copperberg. They're a lovely flavoured cider company, and I've been very happy to have them as my sponsor for the last while, because I consume the stuff and I like it. So it's really, really good. And I don't like many drinks at all. I'm very fussy. But I like them sweet, cold and refreshing, which is definitely what Copperberg is. So if you're out, lads, and you want to financially support Alison Spittle, why not consider a Copperberg in your next night out?
So which departments did you work in Aircom? Tell me about this.
Oh, he was above me. He was in the higher class.
Well, Matt's been more interesting. You tell where you
were. Mine's a plug-in number, please. What number do you require? That's just with the old plugs in, and then I went on to the new system, which is nice. And hold the line, please. I'm trying to connect you.
So wow. Just,
yeah. And so, and I got that. Went for interview, and I knew very little Irish. And I think the thing was the three men that interviewed me, I said, I know I did learn Irish, but I don't speak very much Irish. So I told them what I did then, and then one of the men. And what was it like working for the gentry? What were they like? Immediately, I think that's why I got the job.
Really?
I do. I really do.
Mm-hmm. So Matt was an operator. So the old days was, if you wanted a number down the country, you didn't just pick up and ring.
No.
You had to dial an operator who would then connect you with your destination down the country. So that was when Matt started in the early 70s or whatever, around 1970. That was the old way. If you wanted a long distance connection to anywhere in the world, you couldn't
even
ring directly.
Even to Northern Ireland.
Even
the
Northern Ireland.
You'd have to dial one and get a call up.
An operator. You had to get assistance from an operator. So to make a call from one place to another, you could be talking to three different people, believe it or not.
You know, another connection and another connection along the way.
I worked in the computer department. I worked in accounts force, but when I met Matt in the same building and I moved over to Matt in 1986, I worked in the computer department that looked after directory inquiries. When you rang a number, nowadays you just look it up, but years ago you wouldn't know a number, you'd ring directory inquiries, and I looked after the computer system that housed that information.
Whoa. Mm. Oh my gosh. Mm. And so you were pals, and he became companions, really. Because you helped him when
friends, yeah.
We'd meet RC in the canteen for coffee or something, and that's when the conversation started between us. That's, I say, about 30 years ago. That's how I'm going on the time.
Oh my god. I was gonna ask as well, since you've been married, and when did the press all die down? Like,
I suppose. Shortly after we got married, it kind of died down, I suppose. The latest one we got was the Mirror rang us in April, the end of April. just to see how married life is treating
us. Oh, yeah.
Married life treating you?
It is great.
Well, I said, the best thing I ever did.
Really?
Yes, I do. Because I'd be on my own. I'd be in a home.
Yeah.
Now, I'd be in a home. Now, Michael is not paid by the government, but he has my house such as it is when I die. No.
Oh, you're
sorry. No questions asked. The house is his now. That's why Mary's, God bless her, came up in her wise way, married, no problem.
Yeah.
His part, we're half and half now in the house. That's my, I'm sure my relatives are not pleased, but they can just lump it.
Can I ask as well about, so we live in Stony Batter, part of Dublin.
Oh, yes, yes.
And, well, I suppose this is Smithfield, but very
nice. It's lovely. He is homely.
Yeah, absolutely. But what about Pride? That was on this month. Would you ever go to Pride? Because now it's becoming more and more open. Ooh. It's not gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. It's asexual. It's queer, I think, is a great
terrific.
Term.
Terrific.
Because it's not just... It doesn't matter, like, there's all these different labels and stuff.
I know.
And how actually was the reaction of the LGBT side? Because I've heard about David Quinn's reaction, but what was the reaction?
We were expecting a reaction from the church, and we possibly were expecting something from the LGBT, but we didn't get any negative from anybody.
Yeah.
The only one was David Quinn, and I suppose it wasn't really that negative. He just was saying that this is now what's happening because of what happened in 2015. But I don't think that. We've had nothing but positive. We even met one girl, we were down outside Fresh, a girl came along on a bicycle and says, are you the two guys got married? Yeah. And she says, well, I live up there. She says, me and my partner, girl, we're going to get married as well. Where are you living now? And she only lives down the road from us.
That's right, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Really
yeah,
very
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
So there's been no negative, you know, really.
And you know, even a handshake from people, they've been so, touch wood, they've been so friendly, nobody ever said.
Yeah. And one of the nice things as well with regard to the church was on the Saturday after the wedding, the 23rd, we went down and had some breakfast in Bewley's. We got up early in the morning, had some breakfast in Bewley's.
Yeah.
We then went down to Clarendon Street, and Matt being a prod, but unfortunately he likes lighting candles.
Oh, I went to Mass. I would light candles on my way to church. I don't know when I've been in our own church. But
really?
I can pray anywhere. Doesn't matter. Once I go in, I can kneel and pray and then light candles. And in my memory, we don't have candles in our church. But that doesn't matter. You know, it's just...
But anyway, we went into Clarendon Street and lit a few candles. And as you walk through the courtyard, there's a small little coffee shop. So we just in, had a cup of coffee. And as we were leaving, this lady comes up to us and says, are you the two guys who got married? We said, we are. She says, I'm sister so-and-so. Would you mind coming over to these four men over here? These are retired priests. The older man over here is 92.
Wow.
They want to congratulate you. So we went over and sat with them for another hour.
And
they were congratulating, all getting selfies taken with us and all this.
Yeah.
So that was the closest when we got to where we spoke to clergy. And they just thought it was fantastic. What we
and
did.
I was saying last night, we must go back up there someday and go back. Because they said come back for a chat. They're there every morning. Sorry.
Oh, you're grand. And for people that are listening, like... Matty's sight is not the best, so like if you hear any bumps or anything like that, cop on, we're doing our best, you know. Like, we're grand.
He's not drunk, he's just going blind.
So Michael, you worked at Aircom and now you're an actor. Tell me about that.
Well, I suppose when I came out on disability from Aircom, and I just wanted to do something else, so I said I've been acting a long time in the amateur drama, and I said I must just have a go full time. So I got an agent, and unfortunately I lost the agent because she closed down. But so I've been doing a bit of work around, and mostly work. I worked a lot with a chap called Conor O'Malley, who runs the Dublin Lyric Players, and I've done a few plays with them. But the biggest thing I did, and it was brilliant for me, was in 2016 I played James Connolly. And if anyone's interested, look up dublinlyricplayers.ie. And you'll see some photographs and some information there. It was fantastic. But I played all over the country. But the biggest thing was one of the plays was seen by a friend of the president's. And he wrote an email to the director and asked, would we put the play on privately at Ars Neutron for him and his friends?
In the president's
house?
No,
oh, my gosh. You know, so we went up and we put it on in the state room. And he brought in his friends. But he also brought in all the staff. So we had policemen, soldiers, gardeners, at the catering staff all there, and we did it in the round. So he also invited the author to see the play as well, and it was just the most wonderful day. And so that was one of the main things that I did. I did a couple of feature films that I suppose haven't got out to, but some working with great people. We did a play called Con. It was a mockumentary by a chap called Bertie Brosnan from Kerry, great director and writer and actor. And then the other one I did was Nameless, which is another brilliant film by J.K. Marshall. He's from Dundalk, you know. So, and then work a lot doing short films and stage work when I can, you know. I'm in the middle of a musical now called, they've had to change it. It was originally called The Promise. It's now called Across Blue Waters, and we're putting that on. We're starting off now in Buncloddy Festival, the Buncloddy Arts Festival next week. And we're putting it on in Booterstown for people who want to come along on the 19th.
The 19th of July.
19th of July.
Beautiful music.
Yeah. I'll tweet about that. I'll put that up if you want me to. And
yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, have a look. I'll send it along to you across the waters, the information.
Text.
Yeah. Yeah, with the details on that.
And that's so you're continuing now with the acting as well as caring. And
caring, yeah, yeah. I suppose the main job is caring.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I know it was great. I mean, Matt's caring for me. He doesn't think he is, but he's caring for me as well.
I was going to ask.
Give out to him.
You give out to him?
No, he's got to look after himself as well, you know. You know,
really?
It's very important. He's diabetic. Now, he's had his full checkup the other day with the doctor. I made him go and have that done. I was waiting for results.
Yeah.
So, I've taken control too.
Good for you, Matty. I was going to ask as well about you were showing me a few pictures there. And you said you had your great grandmother's shawl, is it? Or
oh yes, cloak.
Cloak. Yeah. So you kept.
I left it to the museum. I really should ring them.
Which museum?
I was up in the.
This was good few years
the
ago.
Green.
On Clare Street. Now, more
and they were all
it's
excited.
Somewhere, but it's an old shawl, an old style shawl that they loved. But we Matt has never followed up on where it is.
Well, they said they'd let me know. They had little beads that were missing. And
wow.
They called somebody down from upstairs to look at it. And then they said if they're going on display, they'd let me know. So I didn't. Then I forgot all about it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had the photograph of the mother, the great-grandmother wearing it.
Oh, so they have that as well?
No.
Oh, you have that?
I brought it up to bring into them. And, of course, I'll do it tomorrow.
I know.
I think Eileen has got it now. Of her and her son wearing the it's only down to there. But I bought myself a big cloak. I love fashion. Going to work one
you
day in the
love
window.
You do love fashion. You look amazing by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, I like colour and all that. And this is not for show. It's to keep the colour in my shirt up. But this big cloak was in the window. And it was very, very, I love bargains. A great big hood on it, black, with sort of a blue, purpley blue lining
exactly.
Full down. Fit three people, it's so big, full length to the ground. I said, I'll have to get it. I go to a fancy dress in it. It's still there, and it's down in cash. I must bring it up. But to get the photograph of the two of us underneath the big hood, and it would fit two people.
Yeah.
And it was so cheap, and the only tiniest little hole, real wool.
Wow.
And the lining was beautiful. So whether I'll ever wear it now, and I don't know, but I want to get into it. Just to bring it up for the fun. I'd love to have designed clothes. I'd love to.
Was that what that's what you'd like to do? You seem very fashionable.
I love materials and colours and shapes of clothes.
Yeah.
And
ever get to kind of scratch that itch, I suppose, with fashion or with creativity and art?
I invented two things.
What? Invented?
No, I didn't do them, so somebody else beat me to it. I got bits of tweed over that were left down in a factory in Care, and our relatives were down. I said, right, I couldn't do a waistcoat now with the buttonholes. I'll get someone to make a waistcoat, give it to somebody, and they never did it. And I'd knit in the fisherman ribbed sleeves.
An Aran sweater sleeves, right.
With the tweed. And in a month or so afterwards, out it comes in fashion, and I had never done it.
Oh!
And what was the other thing then? Another design in my head I would do, and that came out as well. There was another.
What I think is that these ideas pass through people's minds, and if you don't work on it, it's passed to the next mind who actually will work on it, you know?
Yeah.
How do we get how do ideas come? A lot of people say, oh yeah, you just think of them, but I don't think it is. They're coming in from the universe or whatever, and you come in and you've got an opportunity to do this, and if you don't take that opportunity, it'll then go into somebody else's mind who actually will then run with the idea, you know?
But my grandmother made me out of boredom one wet Sunday, didn't know what to do, and you didn't sit unless you were reading. So she said, right, here, take the knitting and do it. Now, you watched me. So I sit here, so I was slippy. You didn't watch me. That's not knitting. You've got to put the wool, and remember, like the wool round the needle and then knit. I got all interested in this. So I ended up by making a batwing sleeved sweater with 360 stitches on from my mother in a V.
Oh,
all
wow.
Coming out here, and the cuffs are knitted on separately. Then I made an Aran sweater for myself, went dancing and it nearly killed me. Made a mohair sweater for myself and brushed all the hair out to make it look like four, wore her to a dance and nearly killed me. But I got interested in watching it grow. I was creating something, I suppose. And then I just got lazy. And the other phrase was, she used to say, laziness, did I ever, I'm assuming, laziness, did I ever offend thee? So God be good to her. She brought me up. My own mother said one day to me in her own quiet way, she was easy going, give anybody come in for a cup of tea. If she had an apron on her, it didn't really matter. And she, well, you got your grandmother's tongue anyway. She could give a whiplash. She's a tiny, frail little woman. And if she had anything to say to you, you got it and you came in that door. Oh, they won't hear it behind their backs. I say to their face, they don't like it. And he used to cringe, oh my God, what's she going to do now? I want to run away. Now, whether she, I suppose, maybe she didn't feel well, or that was her attitude to life, lash out with them. And they were all my, so I knitted.
The unfortunate thing, though, was that she didn't speak to Matt's mother.
Oh, no?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, but whiplash her.
No. Never because spoke to her because of Matt being born.
No.
Yeah.
Well, for a long time, and when she was ill at the end, she said, I don't want that one near me.
About your mother?
Yeah, just sad. I thought that was sad.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
But the loveliest compliment I ever had, that this really was our cousins up north, my mother's cousins. They were lovely, lovely, lovely people, gentle people. One was a school teacher. She left her teaching to go to a disabled child school to teach them. The other older one was a nurse and she'd retired. She was a character. And the other was top teacher in Tynan County, Armagh. She was married with a family. And what's I going to say about them? They were going off on And Flip was the middle one that wasn't married and left. And she nicknamed me Matsy, you know, she's coming along. Oh, Matsy, said, well, we used to wonder why God sent you. And now we know. He sent you to look after Uncle John and Aunt Bella in their old age. Well, I thought, dear God, could you have a greater compliment? And I did. It was part of my life. There was nothing to do. They were there. I looked after. I fought with them. I made them eat. My mother come up for an hour during the day. But I was there. Saw them to bed and got them out in the morning. But that was part of my life.
Yeah.
So maybe I was sent for that. I don't know. I live on own now. But wasn't it a lovely compliment?
I think you were sent into a lot of people's lives, so it sounds like...
It is true. He bought his mother a house when Matt was in Dublin and his mother was living in the other lodge down on the estate, and her husband had died. She was on her own out there, which is quite isolating. So Matt decided he'd buy her a house in Cashel Town. Now, there wasn't much money. They ended up getting a really cheap house for £600, and over a year it took to get all the things fixed with it. And eventually his mother moved in and lived there for the last 6 years of her life. And she loved it because she loved people. Like Matt, she loved people. And there used to be two girls who used to come and see her
for lunch there
with her.
The shops.
And she loved it. They'd come up and have lunch with her. And So Matt has looked after not only his grandparents, but his mother. And different people, his cousin up the north, me, you know, he really has. And
I'm a saint.
Yeah, so
inside I'm not.
It's happy that he has someone now to look after him because he's done it for so many other people.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that is life. That's what people do when they grow up through life. you know, or such. But my mother, I was glad in a way that I shut the door out into the hallway and leave the door open. I want fresh air in the house. She didn't. She wanted to see somebody go, hello, come in for a cup of tea.
Oh.
This is it. She loved the people.
So what's happening now? I mean, surely someone's making a film of your life.
A Manchester girl saw her story and rang us and wanted to know, would it be possible for her to write a drama screenplay?
Wow.
So she came over, spent 3 days here. We got them into an Airbnb up in Citrick Road, which is up in, just down the road from us. And she interviewed all the different people. People came to see her. She chatted to everybody. So they wrote a treatment, which, is a 500-word storyline. Sent it into Galway Film Lab, but was rejected there, unfortunately.
And so she sent the script. We read it. The different names in. They did it very well now. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Really nice treatment, but they didn't, unfortunately. She just thinks it's a great story, and it's a worldwide story, because it did generate interest worldwide. So if you made a film, I'm sure it would be of the same type of thing. Because what happened to us is a human story.
I couldn't stop thinking about you after I left.
I think it would hit a lot of people that it's a human interest story that would travel the world. So we're hoping that she'll be able to get it made. And then they're doing the documentary as well. Hopefully TV3 will show that.
It's just the two of you is like the power of friendship. And like, I love films. I'm sick of romantic comedies. I like films that kind of celebrate friendship and stuff.
Yes.
I think the world is so revolved around... I watched this thing called Love Island, which is a reality TV show. And it's also... Everyone's just so interested in what people are doing in their relationships. And it's like, why can't people just like each other and be in each other's company?
Mm.
And I think you're a great proof of that. And it's lovely. It's been such a pleasure to have
you. Thank you very much indeed for your nice compliment.
Oh, it's been an honour meeting you.
In my old age, I am, thank God, I am very lucky. Very, very lucky. There are so many people in homes. I've seen them in the nursing homes sitting around in their old age. And I remember when I was in the nursing home after being ill, I said, dear God, am I going to end my days like that?
Yeah.
Sitting. And the day we went up to the park.
St. Mary's in the park.
And Brenda played the harp. Went up to entertain. And the little lady was inside the door and her little doll in her hand. I thought, oh my God, I want to burst into tears. Don't let me do it here. Please don't let me do it here. She's talking away to her little doll. And I can't cry anymore. The tears won't come out. I don't know why. I feel better if I could.
Yeah.
But I was so emotional. And then she moved on down the room. But there they all were. And I suppose they had relatives.
It was. But we were just looking at it from Matty, I suppose, sitting there with all these people. And I'd say maybe 2/3 of them didn't know necessarily where they were coming up to listen to the music we were playing, you know. And I'm just thinking, if Matt was sitting like that, it'd kill him. It would kill him, because he loves people. You can hear how he loves talking.
Oh, I love having people around me.
Loves people around him.
Yep. Then let's put a clip here.
Oh, my gosh. It's been an absolute... I think we'll leave it at that. It's been a wonderful...
I'm sure your head is spinning now.
No, not at all. It's been... thank you so much for coming. I'll switch this off.
Well, it's a great compliment.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Alison. Yeah. Really enjoyed that.
Thank you, indeed.
So that was Michael and Matty. Wasn't that amazing? Especially like Matty's whole story of where he was born and lads, it was an amazing... I had the best time interviewing them. I really did. Really such interesting and sparkling company. And the style of both of them. They're always dressed lovely, and I see them passing by sometimes, and it's great. We'll go through the credits now, and then I'm going to have a proper chat with you about other stuff. If you're listening to this on Wednesday when this comes out, Vodafone Comedy Festival starts tomorrow. I'm headlining 2 shows, and I'm so, so excited about it. I'm also doing a live Ellison Spittle show with Eleanor Tiernan and Ray Butcher, and I've been watching Take My Wife all week. It's so funny, and Eleanor is a bit of a hero of mine, so yeah, I'm really excited about interviewing them. And if you're going to Vodafone Comedy Festival and you're wondering, how do I get tickets to go to the podcast, because it's free, you can't buy them. If you if you have a ticket for another show at Vodafone Comedy Festival on the Thursday, such as, I don't know, maybe the show that I'm on with Aisling B, Ray Butcher, Emma Doran, and someone else. Ooh, so much fun! You should go. And also, I'm doing a show on the Saturday with Connor O'Toole, who's my best friend in comedy. He's amazing. With Fern Brady, Ashley Bentley, Ruth Hunter, and Kate Berlant. So it's going to be a big ball of crack. You should come along to that as well. Just come along to any Vodafone show. It's going to be so much fun. Anyway, I'll do the credits. And then I want to chat to you about my week and preparing for Edinburgh. So thank you very much to Sarah Garvey, who produces this show. Thank you very much to William Conway, who does the artwork. Bobby Ahern, who did the fantastic theme tune. By the way, Bobby Ahern has written a new musical with Giles Brody for the Dublin Fringe Festival. It's loosely based on a famous court case with two musical twins that happened a few years ago. And I cannot wait for it to come out. So go check out Dublin Fringe and find those fellas. And thank you very much to Alan Bennett, who created Head Stuff and has helped me so much with the podcast and stuff. Right, so I want to talk to you, get some stuff out of the way. First of all, I don't know how, like, when I interviewed Matty and Michael, a member of my family tragically passed away that day. And I just want to dedicate the whole episode to Connor Quinn, my beautiful cousin, who passed away suddenly, very young, only 24. And it's kind of mad, like, listening back to two men that are older and kind of lived a fantastic, full life. And, you know, Connor was younger, but he lived a fantastic and full life. And thoughts with him and his partner Stephanie and his baby Connor and Sinead and Anthony and his parents Teresa and Paul. So yeah, now about Edinburgh. So yeah, my cousin passed away, and it put a whole wrench in the works, really. And I didn't think about the show for a while, and now I'm having to rethink about it. I'm kind of running out of time with it, and I felt the last preview I did in Smock Alley, I felt like I kind of reached some sort of point where I was happy with where it was going, but I knew it needed a few more shows, you know, just to, for me to get it in my head, because I don't write it all down. I find the arc by going wherever I'm comfortable with it going, you know. And there's no point. It's so beyond the point now of panicking about it, because it's happening. Like, I only have, you know, a few days. I'm moving house and doing Vodafone Comedy Festival this week. I'm also trying to get more podcasts done in Ireland before I leave, you know, and because I want to get a nice bank of them sorted, so I can kind of relax a bit when I'm doing Edinburgh and when I'm doing the move to London and everything. You know, I still, like, the podcast is one of the most important things to me, because it's one of the only things that's constant, you know, and something that I control, and something that's not that much work for me either, because Sarah Garvey, who produces it, like, helps me so much. So it's kind of like just something I want to keep going. And the Edinburgh thing, I wish there was like a Sarah Garvey for my Edinburgh show. Like, just someone that gets it done. I just know I'm so close to something, and I'm just on the edge of it. I'm going to try and maybe do a preview. Keep an eye on my Twitter. I might do a preview on my house just before I move, because I'm running out of time and I need stage time, and I'll do it for free. That's what I'll do. I'll sort that out. I just need, if I could just pull another week out from under the carpet and just get a lot of stuff done, it would be great. Do you hear that? Some people are having a row. Can you believe that? Yes, other than that, I haven't done much. It's good to talk and tell you what I've done. I did a preview in Galway today, and it wasn't, for me, it wasn't that good, because I'm just a bit sad and just a bit in shock, and I feel weird being a comedian and trying to get back into doing my job that I like, but not, you know, feeling 100%. It's very weird. It's very weird. And any time I kind of have a laugh or anything like that, I don't know. Maybe I should stop talking about this and process. Yeah, maybe I'm talking a bit too much to you. Yeah, sure, fuck it. You don't need to know everything about me. Right. I'll see you soon, 2 weeks' time. Hopefully with some of these lovely podcasts I'm going to have recorded. And then when I go to London, hopefully I'll be able to get some London people and chat to them. And God, lads, wish me luck for this week. Seriously, light a candle for me. I need to get this packing done. I need to get Vodafone done. And yeah. I'm signing off. I'll chat to you soon. I got too many scarves. I need to throw out some scarves, and I don't want to throw out any of them, because how do you pick between scarves? It's a disgrace. Anyway, bye. Bye, 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 bye.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.